But do you count the Facebook time?
I mean,
the stalking, when you're stalking me? If we count that in, it's a little bit better.
So about 7 months ago, I was down in Nicaragua, and previous to, this was back in March, and I had, I was taking a team from Colorado down, it was New Horizons team, I was taking them down, and we were going to visit Gnarly School down there that we support, and there was like 2 days that she didn't really have a lot of things planned, so I was looking for some other opportunities down in Nicaragua where we can take a team down and minister. And I kind of randomly messaged Nathan here. I see that he was doing a feeding program in a town where actually we buy our coffee from. And so I sent him a message, and he was like, who are you? And I was, you know how that is. And so I kind of kept persisting. I was like, hey, you know, this is me. This is what we do. We have a church here in Beach City. And he's like, well, I don't think it's going to work. I have this training program that we're doing, and it's not going to work to hook up. And I was like, okay, that's fine. We'll figure something else out. So while we were down there in March, Nick, you were along with us, right? And so we're down there. I'm like, Nathan all of a sudden messages me and says, hey, our trip got canceled, our thing, so if you guys want to come over, you know, you can. So we have these two groups. If you can picture this, kind of like this Mennonite group over here, and then you have Nathan over here. He doesn't know what he's getting into. We don't know what we're getting into, and we're going to meet up. Never met the person in our life. You know, like it was this crazy God thing.
Yeah.
And we hooked up, and we had the most amazing time. And I'm going to let Nathan, he's going to share his personal testimony as well as what he's doing in Nicaragua. And it's something that I was like, as I was listening to it, I could definitely feel like, we talked about this in our foundations class this morning. While Nathan was sharing with me, I could feel the Holy Spirit moving between us. It was one of those crazy things that I had tears in my eyes. I'm not a crier by any stretch, but I had tears running down my eyes. I had like my heart, I could feel it just bonding with him. And we've become friends over the last couple months. I said, Nathan, you're going to come and you're going to talk and you're share your testimony in my church. And I was like, I don't know if that was going to happen. I mean, we probably both thought like it's kind of crazy, but it's probably not going to happen. So here he is.
And it worked out.
In October, and he is going to be sharing his testimony. So
you'll
give her attention. Maybe give applause to Nathan here.
I don't know about an applause. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for the introduction. My name is Nathan Pendleton. Just gonna start off from the beginning. I was born and raised in Colorado, in a little town called Longmont, just north of Denver. Was raised in a Christian home. Was at church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. It was a Baptist church, and it was very, very legalistic. It was very, very conservative. And it was a church and school that my parents had found after they had moved out to Colorado from Kansas. And through the school, they chose the church because of the school, so that's kind of just where we went and where we got plugged in at. And unfortunately, it was a church that was not alive. It was dead. It was dead, and it was completely about your outward appearance and making sure you had your tie on Sunday morning and making sure you didn't say the wrong words or the wrong things or to go to the wrong places, and it was completely works-based on your outward appearance. And growing up in that environment, you know, it's just not healthy. It's just not what God wants for us. And growing up with my parents, their story, they grew up with no rules, so that neither one of them grew up Christian. Both of them grew up with parents who said, go do whatever you want. I mean, my mom went to Panama City for spring break. My dad went in the Navy and went off and did his own thing and never really had a relationship with his father or friendship or anything like that. So he never really had an example of what a father should be or what a father should do. But this church, which I agree with, I'll say this, I don't know if you want to call it corporal punishment, but spanking your kids. And there is a point where it is spanking your kids, and there's a point where it is beating your kids. And unfortunately, my dad did not have a very light hand, and he actually used a wooden paddle. He took a piece of wood that was about, I don't know, it was about 3/4 of an inch thick, about that wide, about that long, had a handle on it. And sometimes, I mean, the worst one that I can recall was 150 times he spanked me with it, as hard as he could, across the back of my legs and the back of my butt. And it broke me. It broke me as a person. It hurt me as a person. It was done out of love and correction, but it was really, it was abuse. I mean, it was a physical beating that I took on a constant basis. Not to say I didn't deserve the correction, but I did deserve that kind of correction. You know, I wasn't the good kid all the time. I was always getting in trouble. I always lied about everything, and I didn't know why. I would lie about the dumbest things that I wouldn't even be in trouble if I told the truth about. But I just was always in trouble. So then I got that label, black sheep of the family. You know, I was the one that got off the path. I was the one that wasn't gonna make it to heaven, if you will. And just grew up in that environment and had some really rough years. And then I went in my teenage years, and you know how that gets better as your relationship with your parents once you have teenagers. You know, that tends to be the better time, right? So as we grew into that, you know, I reached a point with my dad at about the age, I think I was about 15 years old, and he was spanking me for something, and I was counting. I would count out loud, 31, 32, 33, 34. I mean, I'd been beaten so many times, like it just didn't hurt anymore. It just didn't even, I just had like a safety mechanism of some sort in my mind that would just shut off the pain. And he stopped and he goes, "This really isn't working, is it?" And I said, "It never really has." And I stood up because I was bent over the bed, and he handed me the paddle, and he was like, "Here." He's like, maybe it'll hurt you if you have to paddle me. And I just dropped the paddle at his feet, and I was like, "You're not worth it." And I turned around and walked out of his bedroom. I mean, that was the kind of rebellious teenager I was. I did not care. And at that point, I was my sophomore year. I was really fed up with the religious system that I was growing up in and the way it had treated my older brother when he had gotten in trouble for something very small, and was just over. It just came to a breaking point where I just knew inside myself, I was like, I no longer want anything to do with this or anything to do with these people or with God. I believe in God. I know he exists. I know it's truth and all that stuff, but I just don't want anything to do with it. This isn't okay. This like these things aren't these. They it wasn't making sense in my mind. And so I'm going to pause right there and introduce my family. This is my wife Maria, and my son Isaac, and we have another one, Jeremiah, that's due in January. And the things I went through with my father have definitely molded the father that I want to be today. But I didn't get here by myself. I didn't get here through my own knowledge. I didn't change because I wanted to be a better person. I didn't figure things out, and I didn't figure things out for a long, long time. In high school, I got kicked out of the private school. I went off on the pastor. I went off on the teachers. I went off on the principal. I told them what I thought about them. I was cussing them up and down. Said, "I'm out, I'm done, see you later." Go to the public school, went to the public school, did 2 years there, graduated, signed up for the Army, get me out of town, get me out of here. I just want to get away from all this. And went to the Army and loved it, surprisingly. I thought, "Oh, I'll go in and be a medic, you know, I'll get a job working in a hospital or something like that, and that'll be great." And then when I graduated basic training, they said, "Well, you know, who wants to go to airborne school? Who wants to jump out of planes?" And so I was like, "Hey, that sounds fun, yeah. I'll sign up for that," and ended up getting assigned to an infantry unit in the 82nd Airborne Division in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and spent 4 years in the military in the service and received an honorable discharge and got out and was ready to go to school, ready to go to college, ready to go make me some money, you know, go make my fortune, go make my American dream, go do what I want to do, you know. And so I moved down to Florida and lived there for 11 years, went to school at University of North Florida, and studied in business and minored in psychology, and just was living a sinner's life. I was drinking. I'd started drinking pretty heavily in the Army. In high school, I started smoking weed and smoking cigarettes sometimes. I wasn't really into drinking that much in high school because when I'd get home, my parents could actually smell that on my breath. So I kind of stayed away from alcohol. But then when I went to the Army, man, I just went full into it because I had been so sheltered and put in such a bubble my entire life that when I broke out of that, I just went crazy. I just went nuts. And it's just been, it's been so amazing what God has done in my life. Because I went through the 4 years in the Army and went through a lot of hurt. I went on 2 deployments, which definitely affected me very negatively, pushed me into a darker place. I went off and went to school, started focusing on school, partying, you know, going out to the clubs, going out to the bars. You're around that lifestyle enough, guess what's going to happen? You can get caught up with the wrong people. You go to the wrong places, you're going to end up in the wrong places. And I just wasn't concerned about that. I was just concerned about having fun and doing what Nathan wanted to do and going to music festivals. And then through that, through a friend, a roommate, you know, started experimenting with drugs and cocaine and LSD and other stuff. But I just was hurting on the inside and was lost on the inside with no direction, with nowhere to go, with nothing inside of me that had any kind of standard, any kind of regulators on my life. I just had no boundaries. I just was wild and crazy for a long time. And so then I graduated college and you know, just kept continuing to live that life and got a really good job, making really good money doing medical device sales. Was very successful doing that, but absolutely hated it. And really showed me kind of the dark side of a lot of people that I, you know, you think we're good people, and so just really just left a bad feeling in me what I was doing, and so I quit that, and I thought, you know, what is it I've always wanted to do? I want to be a charter fishing captain, and so I went down to the sea school there in Jacksonville and went and got my captain's license, and then through a family connection started working as a charter fishing captain. And through that lifestyle, I mean, all those guys, a lot of those guys that work on those boats are addicted to drugs and smoke and drink heavily, so just continued to grow that addiction, that lifestyle, that process. It wasn't just like I went from this good, clean kid to all of a sudden an addict overnight. It was this period of 12, 13 years, and it was just one little thing, you know, the devil brings me at a time. Oh, this isn't that big of a deal. Oh, it's just once. Oh, it's just this. Oh, it's just that. By the time I'd reached my late 30s, I had a 2-gram-a-day cocaine habit and couldn't function without it. Couldn't get out of bed and go to work. Couldn't do what I needed to do without it. I mean, I would drink my first beer at 10 o'clock in the morning and drink beer all day and then switch to liquor at night when we got back after fishing and then go out and party and do the wild thing, you know, go out and just do whatever I wanted to do. And one night, me and my roommate were out and we were drinking and sure enough, on the way home, we both got pulled over. And I got charged with a felony DUI and felony criminal mischief. So there I was sitting in the jail facing 2 felony charges, and my charter, my captain's license is a federal license. So I was thinking, man, I'm going to lose my career, I'm going to lose my job. You know, I can't even think about what my family's going to say. I mean, they won't be too surprised. This is pretty par for the course, you know. They won't be too surprised. I mean, it was only a matter of time, but you know, I really hit rock bottom at that point. And in that same time period, just shortly after that, my father died, and I hadn't spoken to him in seven weeks. And just really pushed me down to the bottom of the barrel and the bottom of my life, and where I was so broken and alone and hurting, and my life was such a mess, and I did not want to live anymore. I didn't want to live. I didn't want to wake up in the morning. I would put and then 2.5 grams is the legal amount, the lethal amount of cocaine that will kill a person. And I would put 3 or 4 grams out on the table and do every single one of them as fast as I could, hoping I would have a heart attack or not wake up in the morning and then turn around and chug alcohol after that. But for some reason, God wouldn't let me do it. God wouldn't let me go. He wasn't done with me. And I went through a really, really, I mean, there was about 7 months there where it was just constantly, I didn't want to live anymore. I didn't have any hope. I didn't have anything. And one night in my bedroom, I was just laying in my bed just thinking, and these two verses came back to my mind. It was because it was the verses my mom always used when she didn't know what to say to me. Because, I mean, when you beat a kid with a piece of wood and he doesn't obey you, I mean, what else can you do? You know, grounding him's not going to do anything. You know, taking away his toys, and I mean, there was nothing they could do or say. And so, to not have the words, my mom would just always quote to me Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. Those verses came to my mind. I said, man, I just don't get it. It's not real to me, you know? Like, what's this mean? Like, I don't get it, God. And started having a conversation with God in my head and just saying, you know, like, what is this? I believe in you. I believe in this book, but I don't know. I can't live this life. I can't be this good person. I can try to do good, but I won't do good. It's like Paul says. I want to do good, but I don't. I don't want to steal, but I do. I don't want to kill, but I do. Like, so many different things. And I came to a very broken, very broken moment in my life and turned to God and said, God, I need you to fix me. I need you to fix this. I have made an incredible mess. I have done things that have hurt people so deeply, I haven't spoken them to anybody else. There are secrets that I'm going to keep with me to go into the grave. I was not a good person. I was a very, very bad person. And I turned to God in that moment, and I said, God, I don't know what this is. I don't understand your word. I believe in you. I know you exist out there somewhere. I know I want to go to heaven someday, but I need you to help me. And it was my cry for help. And I cried out to Him, and I said, God, like, fix my life, and I will live my life by these verses. Fix my life. Fix who I am. Make me different. Like, whatever this is, whatever's in your word, whatever it's true, whatever's real, if you'll show it to me, I promise you I will follow you and be obedient to whatever it is you call me to do. And this is the part where a lot of you are going to get shaken in maybe your theology or your understanding. Because it shook me to my core. In my bedroom, not a physical presence, but a very physical feeling of a presence came in the room with me and rested upon me. I could no longer lift my head. I could no longer lift my eyes. I could no longer lift my arms or my legs or move or anything. And I began to weep and cry like a baby. Like a baby. That baby cry turned into ugly cry. I heard a voice, and that voice said, your father's here. I want you to pour out your heart to him. And I thought it was my physical, earthly father at the time. So I started, oh my goodness, Dad, I'm so sorry. You know, I'm so sorry for the way things ended between us. And I'm just sweating. I've got sweat just pouring out of every single pore in my body. I'm not shaking, but just under this weight where I just can't move, I can't get up, it's just too much. And I begin to pour out my heart to my father and saying, Dad, you know, I'm sorry about this. I'm sorry I lied all the time. I'm sorry I stole. I'm sorry for the fire that I set down at the football field and the police had to come to the house. And I mean, it's just so many things. And went all the way back through my childhood and my teenage years, and then God took me into, you know, my later years and everything, and I just felt like I was pouring out my heart to my earthly father. I really felt like that was him in the room with me. And now my understanding is it was not. That was my heavenly father. That was God that came and visited me, and his spirit came and rested on me. because I asked him to, because I gave up, because I came to the end of myself to die to myself and said, you know what, whatever it is, I will serve you. I don't care what it is, as long as it's me and you. As long as it's not me, you, and the church, or me, you, and the pastor, or me, you, and this. It was like, it's got to be me and you. And that's what God wants for each and every one of us. And that night lasted, I don't know how long exactly the presence of the Holy Spirit was upon me. I woke up the next day to my bed completely soaked, dripping water onto the floor. The mattress, the sheets, the pillows, everything. A king-size bed. And I was like, what in the world? What happened last night? Is that the drugs? You know, like, is that the... What was that? You know, like, have I fried my brain so bad that, like, I didn't get it. My roommate thought I was going through a withdrawal. He almost called an ambulance because he opened the door and saw me laying there in the bed and saw how I was just talking and crying and everything else, and he just didn't know what was going on. He thought he didn't know what to think. He was pretty freaked out by it. But so I got up and went back to, you know, that was weird. That was whatever. And the next day, when I went to open that first beer, I didn't want to. It's like, you know what? I was like, I really don't like the way this tastes. I mean, I opened it and started to drink it, but I was like, man, I think I'm not going to have one right now. I'll have one later. I'll finish that later. Cocaine, 2 to 3 days, I was done. Didn't want it, didn't touch it, walked away from it, haven't struggled with it since. Walked away from alcohol, alcoholism, addicted to cocaine, smoking weed every day, smoking cigarettes. That was the hardest thing for me to quit, was nicotine. But God completely started to change me on the inside from that night on, and change who I am, and change me into who He created me to be. And me dying to my flesh and being able to live for Him is a process. And that was the beginning of the process. And the first thing He did is He came and He set me free, just like His Bible promises. And if there's anybody out there that's dealing with addiction or dealing with anything like that similar in their life, I'm telling you, if you will come to Jesus, He will set you free. It is promised in His Word, and He will do it. I've seen Him do it with my older brother now, because my older brother struggled with alcoholism, and now he's been set free from that. My younger brother struggled with a lot of things too. He's been set free from that, and it's just gone and spread. And every day I've just woken up and tried to live my life by Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not into your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He'll direct your paths. And that night in my bedroom when I said, I'll do whatever it is you want me to do if you fix my life, He fulfilled His promise. And so I've always tried to fulfill my end of it. The two felony charges, I went to court and they dismissed them. I walked out of there and paid a $400 court fee, and it's no longer on my record. Something unheard of in the court system. Just completely of God. Completely of God setting up the people in my path that I needed in order to bring me back and restore my life to where I could be of service to Him. And I just started to walk that out and started to follow Him each and every day. And because of the DUI charges, I was on a restricted license, and had my roommate at the time worked for a guy running a landscaping company, and he went to jail too, but it was the second time, so he lost his license. So I told this guy, I was like, well, you know, I could use the side work now, you know, and it's kind of off season for fishing, so, you know, I'll help you out and I'll drive your truck for you and do that, just to have something to do to keep me from getting in trouble, you know, because I was just starting to go to church at that point and was just starting to seek God. And he invited me, the guy that owns the company invited me to a church in Jacksonville, Florida called Celebration Church, and I went there. And it was so radically different than anything I had experienced growing up. I mean, I walked in and people loved me. They didn't care about my tattoos. They didn't care that I didn't know the right language to speak. They didn't, You know, they didn't care. Like, they just loved me for where I was at and just encouraged me. And through that whole situation, God has used that to bring me into Nicaragua. And I was working as the charter fishing captain and committed to this guy to run his landscaping company for 4 to 6 months because he wanted to adopt two kids from Nicaragua. But I fought God on it for almost 6 months before I finally broke down and said, Okay, God, yes, I told you I would do whatever it is you want me to do. I'll seek your will each and every day. And he just made it so abundantly, overwhelmingly clear that he wanted me to run this guy's landscaping company. And it was the last thing on earth I wanted to do. I mean, Florida landscaping summertime, miserable. Miserable. It is so hot. So I think it's the third or fourth hottest job in the world. And it took everything inside of me to fight God to say, no, I don't want to do this. I want to go back and get on my boat and go fishing. I want to go back. I love the ocean. I want to go back that way. And he said, no, go this way. No, you need to take this path. This is what I want you to do. And so I committed to Billy to run his landscaping company. And through that, he took me down to Nicaragua 2 times. The first time I volunteered at an orphanage, and the second time I went up to Hinatega to an orphanage, and God spoke to me very clearly there. And the Holy Spirit came and rested upon me again when I was cooking lunch in an open kitchen right next to the chicken slaughterhouse, which is where I was sleeping. And he just came and spoke to me and said, you know, Nathan, I want to talk to you. I was like, okay, I'm listening. He says, no, I want to talk to you. And I was like, oh, one of those moments where I ugly cry and snot comes out of my nose and I sweat profusely, and it's amazing. Let me tell you, it's the most amazing thing I've been to Bonnaroo, I've been to Burning Man, I've been to all these the wildest parties in the world that you can think of, and nothing even comes close to being in the presence of God and His Spirit coming and resting on me. And I went in my little room, and the Holy Spirit came and rested on me, and I know because I start crying, and I didn't used to be a crier. I cry all the time now. I think I'm making up for all the years I was Mr. Tough Guy. But when he comes and speaks to me, it's just so precious. And he told me, he said, you know, my babies are starving. I need you here. I need you to come to Hinatega. I need you to come serve and work with and help these poor people in the mountains. And boy, that was not on my radar. I was not me. Do what? How? Why? All those questions went through my mind. But I knew one thing, that I'd been obedient all the way up to this point, following exactly what God had wanted me to do each and every day, just living Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And he had never let me down, and he had fixed my life, and he'd repaired all the broken relationships with my family members, and he had fixed friendships and removed the friendships that couldn't be fixed and the friendships that weren't healthy for me, gave me a whole new Christian family that absolutely loved me, that showed me what really loving people looks like. And in that same moment when the Spirit was on me and told me that, I said, well, that's great, you know, but Adam had Eve. Where's my Eve? You know? and sure enough, he had Eve for me. And I met my wife Maria while I was there volunteering. Her sister was the administrator of a coffee farm. And I met her, and we didn't hit it off right away. She didn't like me. She didn't know what I was doing. She was, what's this gringo want? Why is he coming down to the market to visit me? Because she worked in the market and lived a very, very poor life, lived in a very, very slum community, dirt floors, no running water, no bathrooms, maybe making $2 to $3 a day selling chocolates or selling handkerchiefs or stuff like that, just a really survival type of existence. So she couldn't make sense in her mind, but God had spoken to me about her, and it made sense in my mind, and so I just was like, well, it's going to happen. God will make it happen. And so I left a couple months later, and she thought she would never see me again, and I told her, I was like, I'll be back, I promise you, I'll be back. God's going to do this, because he called me to it. And she thought she would never see me again. I got on the bus and rode to Managua and flew out and flew home and then told my family what I was going to do. And they all were like, oh, my goodness, what is Nathan doing now? What is he getting into now? Like, come on, man. That's just too much, you know, like that's just too crazy. But my mom believed in me. And my mom said, I'll support you. She said, I'll support you. And has supported me to this day. And within 5 months, God miraculously set me up with a nonprofit and enough funding to move back to Nicaragua. And I had no mission, I had no vision, I had no clue what God was going to do with me. I just knew I needed to go back to Jinotega and help poor people. And so I moved back to Jinotega, and as soon as I got back, I asked Maria to marry me, and we got married a month later. And it was a very interesting first year of marriage. We were both learning. She was learning English. I was learning Spanish. And it was awesome because God really, you know, took that first year and really grew us close together. I mean, he told me, don't do ministry. Don't do anything. Just focus on your wife. Just focus on your wife. This year's for you and your wife. And so during that time, just going and visiting where she used to live with her mom, there was a couple of kids that would come by the house and beg for food every single night when we were there. And I was like, well, what are these kids? Why are they asking, you know, my American mentality, why are these kids coming by asking for food? Where's their parents? Why aren't their parents providing for them? Why don't they have food in their own home? And she was like, oh, well, when me and my mom worked in the market, we had enough that we would share with 3 or 4 kids every night because there's some kids whose parents go to the market and don't make any money. And so they have nothing to eat for the day, nothing. They don't have rice, they don't have beans, they don't have tortilla, they have nothing. And I was like, well, man, I got enough extra money. We can feed a couple kids, you know, we can feed 3 kids. And that's where we started, and that was almost 4 years ago. And we just started three kids in a simple little house. And now I'm going to show you a video of Deeply Rooted Grounds, of the work I'm doing in Nicaragua, and kind of what we've been doing over this last year. We've made some really incredible advancements in where we're going and what we're doing, and I'm real excited about what God has for us in the future with a home for special needs orphans and kids and orphans with terminal illnesses, and we're also launching a physical therapy program. And God gave me this desire in my heart because he spoke it to me 7 years before the first time I visited Nicaragua and told me, you'll have an orphanage someday for kids with disabilities. Why? Because my biggest fear was kids. I did not like kids. I did not want kids. And I definitely didn't want a kid with a disability because I did not know how to handle that. I knew if there was a little me running around, it was not going to be a good thing. Well, guess what? I'm about to have 2 of them running around. But my first son was born emergently and went through a very traumatic birth via C-section and contracted sepsis and was given a 1 in 100 chance to live. And I went home, and this is just one of the few things that God has done for us is I went home and fell on my face, and I just told God, I said, his name's Isaac. I was like, he's on the altar. He's yours to take. You know, I felt like Abraham with a knife in my hand, just getting ready to, like, come on, send me, like, but I was like, you know what? He's yours to take and he's yours to give, and I'll love you either way, and I'll be faithful to you, and I'll still worship you and praise you just like I do now. And we went back to the hospital the next day, and he slowly started getting better, and within 24 hours, he was off the ventilator, and then we got him transferred down to Managua, and he was intensive care in Managua for almost 20 days, and antibiotics, and figuring out exactly what was going on. So he's got his struggles. He's got his work cut out for him because he went through a pretty traumatic birth. And so he's intelligently completely there. If you'll put the picture of him up with his physical therapist, this was this last December, so he's a little bit smaller. But he is just the happiest kid you'll ever meet in your entire life. He laughs at everything. He never cries. And he's struggling really bad to develop his motor skills. But through all of that and through having to look for the therapy that I need for him and medicines and all those things, God has grown my heart now to love the special needs, the kids with disabilities, and the orphans in order to be able to serve them in the way that He's called me to serve them. And so it's just been amazing how God's redeeming even the little things like the devil trying to kill my own son and using that for His glory to what He's going to do now. And He's going to bring treatment and hope and love to so many kids where there's no options right now for them in the entire area where we're at. I actually have to pay our therapist to come from an hour and a half away 3 days a week. She has to ride a bus for an hour and a half just to get to us and does the therapy in our home. And I just bought the real basic stuff for inside our home, and that's where we do therapy. And I'm thinking, man, if I got all these resources and this is what I got to do, what's everybody else doing? And so God opened my eyes up to the community with disabilities, and there's just no hope for them. There's nothing. There's nothing. There's literally no, like, it's not even a possibility to get physical therapy or get seen or any of that. And so God's really used that to move us into our future and what we're going to do. But I'm going to show the video now. Just a little 6-minute video, kind of overcaps of who we are, what we do, and all of our different feeding programs and what we got going on. Won't play? Okay. It's all right. So I'll fill you in on what's going on. So we started with those three kids. And with those three kids, we just started rice and beans, and we grew to 15, 20 kids and over about a 3 or 4 month period. And then we were like, okay, well, we got a nice little group. Let's start doing like Sunday morning Bible school class with them and doing Bible lessons and games and activities and playing soccer with them, and just started doing that. And then God spoke to me about a house that was for sale in the slum area that was right next to where my mother-in-law's house was, and spoke to me about it and said, I want you to buy that house. And I was like, I don't have the money to buy that. I mean, it's a shack, but it's made out of tin and wood and dirt floors and no running water and one light bulb, and I was so small, I didn't even have the resources to buy that. And so I posted something online, and through that, God spoke to a woman, and she donated the money. And so now we've turned that location into a dream center where we are feeding and educating and giving medical care to over 250 kids every single day. And that's just one of our programs. And we've got a partnership now with Orphan Network, and we've got a network of 26 churches throughout the department, throughout the rural mountains of Hinatega, all the way up to the north, each have a feeding program. So we put out enough food for a little over 5,000 to feed 5,000 kids every single month. And that's just been the growth that we've seen in the last couple years, and just seeing what God's provided through so many different resources and different things. And one thing I wanted to show you guys, so this was the house that we actually started the feeding program in. This was my mother-in-law's house, where my wife grew up. So that was your typical kitchen made out of a mud stove, wood-burning little stove, dirt floor, and you can see just how it's open across the top. And you can go to the next picture. This is her. That's my wife standing at the front door and her cooking. So this is what the house looked like. I mean, this was it. This is what they had. I mean, it's next to nothing, you know. And that's where we started. So recently, there's a view of the back of the house. So recently, you guys had Vacation Bible School this last summer, and you guys raised money to help build a home. And that house you saw before, this is what it looks like now. And we rebuilt her home where we started the feeding program and gave her a brand new home through the money that you guys raised at Vacation Bible School. And it is a huge blessing, and I am coming from them to say thank you so much for your donations, for your help, for your support. I mean, you can see the difference in the pictures. Now they have a clean place to live. Having concrete floors increases a family's health by 70%. It's one of the greatest things that you can do to give them to actually build the health of the family. And so we also have a church, El Rio, that I've been pastoring for a year and a half. And so our Dream Center and our outreach in that slum community, we have a church location where we have church on Sundays. And I just hired a Nicaraguan pastor that's going to start with me in December, so I no longer have to carry the title of pastor, and I can move on to just being Nathan again, which I'm pretty excited about. But it's been, you know, I could stand up here for hours and talk to you guys about what God has done. I have so many stories with what he's done for my son, with what he's kept me and my wife out of danger so many times. We've been held at gunpoint, and he brought us out of that situation unharmed. I mean, just so many things that I just don't have the time to tell you, and I'd love to, but I can tell you this. God is so much bigger than our little minds can understand. But it's so simple, and if we'll just have a childlike faith and follow him and wake up every day and say Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with all my heart. Don't depend on my own understanding. Don't go by my own thoughts, because my own thoughts are going to lead me in the wrong way. Trust in him. Give it all to him, and he'll show you the path to take. And you take that path, he is going to flip your life upside down. It is going to be awesome. It is the most amazing thing. He's set me free from every addiction, every pain. When I think of my earthly father, I have no hard feelings towards him. I love him to death. I look forward to seeing him in heaven one day. I have no hurt. I have no pain. Why? Because Jesus saved me and he made me whole again. And that's it, man. And that's my story. And it's been awesome to see what God's doing down in Nicaragua. Really looking forward to this next year, and I think Joe's going to be coming down, maybe coming down in February and all that. So it's just amazing who God is and what he wants to do with us, and if we'll just get out of the way, get ourselves out of the way, and just let the Holy Spirit come and work in our lives, he will make us new again.
That just listening to you, like what I was thinking about it, like Nathan isn't, and I'm gonna, he's an ordinary dude, okay? Like he's not Superman, he's just a regular guy. I've got to know him, like, well, we've hung out the last 3 days, so we kind of got to know each other a little better. And what I came away from that is every one of us has a story. It might not be everybody, one of us is battling something. You know, we all have our vices, we all have something that we're going through. And what Nathan said is God is so much bigger than that. He thinks so much bigger. We sometimes are thinking, okay, like what am I gonna be doing next week or the next month, or we kind of have this little finite plan. But God actually seen Nathan's story years out. He seen where he was gonna be, he seen that he was gonna end up in Nicaragua, gonna marry to a local lady there. And
yep.
I mean, God's seen that. And if you told me that, you know, like 5 or 6 years before, you're but that's just what God does. He sees the big picture. And so I just want to, you know, encourage each one of us here. You know, we don't, sometimes we get caught up in corporate America, caught up in our own little lives and where we're going, and we don't look at the big picture, what God's doing. And the other thing I want to do is just thank you guys for the donation that you gave to Nathan. I mean,
oh,
that was really
thank
big.
You.
It was amazing. I think it was the most we've ever raised at DBS. And so kids and everything, you guys are amazing.
Yeah.
God uses us here too. Like, I mean, it's not like not everybody goes to another country. God uses us where we're at. But the thing is, we have to be welcome. We have to say, you know, it's not about me. I'm going to open myself up, and it's bigger than myself. In fact, God most of the time wants us to get out of the way so that he can make himself famous and he can make his name known.
He wants to do something so big that everybody knows it's him and not you. Because that's the only way you can look at my life. It's the only way you can explain everything that's happened is Jesus. It's the only answer to everything.
Yeah, you can't logically look at it and think that this is from this point to this point, you got there by yourself. It just doesn't happen.
Doesn't work.
So, Okay, well, thank you for your time, Pastor Everly. Let's stand. We're going to have a closing prayer then. Dear God, just I want to bless the work that Nathan and his wife are doing down in Nicaragua. Just the calling that you've given to him and just how he is making him famous down there. And dear God, just that his story has touched someone's life here. If they're battling something, if they're going through something, if they've had hurts, maybe they've had family hurts, maybe they've had, maybe they're struggling with an addiction right now, dear God, and that you would just come to them and that they can cast your care on their cares on you, and you can open up that door to free them from addictions. And dear God, we just pray for the church here as well, that you know what our calling is, you know what we're supposed to do in life. You know, we're supposed to live out the Great Commission. We're supposed to make you known and famous. And we just want to lift you up and give you all the glory for everything that we say here today. And I ask this all in your name.